Hello and welcome to WonderPod episode 90, take 2. That's correct. I'm beating Pat to the punch to remind you all that we fucked the pooch last week. So yeah, this is episode take 2, some of what we were going to do last week and some new stuff-ish type stuff. Joining me this week, as always, you should know the routine by now, is John.
Hey, everybody.
And also joining us this week is the aforementioned Patrick.
What is going on, people? Episode 90, the second. Whew. I know I'm relieved.
Episode 90, the second.
That's not confusing.
Next generation. That's right.
Yeah. Well, if we get to episode 90, XVIII, we'll quit long before then. But yeah, pretty much. So it's been like 3 weeks since we've done what we've been playing. So kind of try to trim it down to a certain extent if you can. Although I know John has an interesting anecdote for us that I do want to hear. Well, let's start with him. John, what have you been playing this week?
All right. Luckily, my new games that I've played since last week's misstep hasn't been too many. But I will say that there's a new game in my pile of shame, and that is Marvel vs. Capcom 2 HD, which, interestingly enough, was purchased by my 20-month-old son. It would seem he somehow got a hold of my Xbox controller, turned it on, and pressed A repeatedly enough that he got into last week's deal of the week of Capcom fighting games and clicked on Marvel vs. Capcom 2. And of course, I have a little stockpile of Microsoft points built up, so I'm now the owner of Marvel vs. Capcom 2 HD. So upon discovering this late, not last night, but the night before, I think, I booted it up and decided to give it a shot. I remember playing it a little bit. I'm not sure if it was a little bit or a lot. I played it at the old arcade at the university years and years ago. So I gave it a shot. I played one round. My trio was Spidey, Iron Man, and the Hulk. I played on medium difficulty and lost because I am not a fighting game guy still. So I'll probably give it some more time in the new year, but for now it's going to sit in the pile, and I can thank my boy Peter for that. Another new game that I've been playing since last week was I gave Metro 2033 a little peruse on PC. And of course, you know me and my luck with PC gaming, the game ran okay, but I was getting a lot of screen tearing, and so it wasn't bad enough that I couldn't play it, but it was noticeable. And of course I scratched my head but I shook my head and got kind of mad that my game that only came out the other, not that long ago, I think it was maybe last year, maybe the year before, I can't quite remember, but really recent, didn't work immediately on my brand new PC. And I went into work the next day and went on a complete rant to my friend Brett, and who was an avid PC gamer, and he basically called me a wuss bag for not being tough enough to play with settings and do the kinds of adjustments that you need to do to get PC games to work, to run properly. To which I said, I'll take my console. It's ready to go just about every time I boot up a game. So that being said, I did play it for about, I guess, about an hour, maybe an hour and a half or so. And it's a cool game. If you're not familiar with it, it takes place in Russia, which is a cool change for a setting for a game. It's a first-person shooter. And what it is, it's a post-apocalyptic wasteland. Nuclear war has happened, and the surface of Moscow, I'm pretty sure you're in Moscow, the surface world is basically desolate and full of radiation, and you can't go up there without, wearing protective gear. So you spend most of your time underground in the subway tunnels and the sewers, and, whatever survivors are still alive are down there trying to survive, you know, scraping together whatever sustenance they can, making venturing up to the surface to collect supplies, bring them back down. But the whole time you're kind of dealing with these mutants, which kind of look like giant rat creatures. And I saw a few flying ones too, which are interesting. So it's kind of a monster. It's not a survival horror game by any stretch, but it kind of has some of that high intensity feel. Very moody, very down, and kind of. And I found it, you know, despite the screen tearing, it kind of sucked me in pretty good there. So I'm looking forward to getting back to that. Back onto the 3DS, as per Patrick's recommendation a few weeks ago, I gave the AR games another shot. I tried the fishing game. It's pretty cool. You just have a rod on your, a 3D rod on your screen with a line and a bobber, and you put it in the water, and these shadows of fish come up and nibble on it, and you pull it when they take a bite. And the first thing I thought of was Animal Crossing. It is just like Animal Crossing's fishing, but without all the menial tasks of Animal Crossing. So that's pretty cool. It's just fishing. So it's pretty basic, but I caught these huge fish, and I eventually caught a dragon, which I then had to fight by dropping bombs on it attached to my, like, instead of a bobber on my end of my line, there was a bomb that I had to drop on him whenever he came up from the water. So it was a neat little, you know, doohickey to play with. I have to imagine that Animal Crossing fishing, whenever it comes to 3DS, will be just like that, maybe minus the dragon, and more repetitive menial tasks. So now I'll get to the games that I talked about at length last time on the defunct podcast. But I won't go into as long as I did then, because I talked at length. So you guys out there are lucky that I'm not going to rant that long. But so Mario Land 3D, I finished the first set of levels, if you will. What I mean is I finished the game and unlocked the second half. I guess it's the second half. It seems to be what's pretty cool, a complete set of new levels, or at least variations on old levels that kind of change things up a little bit and increase the challenge. I'm only on Special World 2, so the levels haven't been too difficult. Though there was one level where you kind of had to finish the level while collecting all the big star coins while avoiding Dark Mario, who appears in Mario Galaxy a bit. And he's chasing you, so if he touches you, you get hurt or die. The enemies, of course, are running around, and you have to get the coins and get to the flag at the end. So it's a little bit more challenging, a little more stressful. So that's cool, because it's not so much that it was a complaint that I had about Mario Land 3D, but you know, most of the levels are very delightful, they are very straightforward, and they're intentionally bite-sized, so they're not very long. So these levels kind of give the, I guess, the hardcore Mario guy a little more meat to play with, or to chew on, I should say. I will say about the first half of the game, I guess. Those final levels, when you're taking on Bowser in World 8, those are some of the best levels in the game. I really enjoy the final that little fight with Bowser and having to outrun him. I won't get too much into spoiler territory, but it is really cool and looks spectacular on the 3DS. We were hoping Mario Land 3D would be a system seller, and I really hope it is. It really should be, because it's really one of those games that really showcases what that system can do. And finally, I'll talk about Skyward Sword. I picked that up on launch day, and it's really, really good. I'm trying to remember the things that I said last time, because now I've just finished the third temple, where I think I only just got to the second temple last time. And the world of Skyward Sword is it's really pretty in terms of now let's talk about art design and how things look. I really wish the game was in HD, because it really is too bad that some of these textures are so pixelated and rough when they really get close to the camera. So like moments where Link is like in other Zelda games, climbing up walls of vines and leaves, and they come past the camera, they really look I wouldn't say, I can't say terrible or horrible, but you can tell that if this was in HD, the level of detail would just pop and really be less distracting. Because when Link's running around, you don't notice these kinds of things because you're kind of focused on what you're doing and where you're going. So it doesn't matter that much. And you know, if you're sat, you know, back from your television, I have a 46 inch, and admittedly my chair that I sit in is kind of close to the screen. I guess if I was sitting back further, where I would get a, you know, the minute details and textures probably wouldn't matter so much. The storyline is really good. Link is, you start out in the sky in this town called Skyloft, where you're training to be a knight of the sky, and Zelda is also in your school amongst other students, and, you know, shit goes down and she goes missing, so you gotta go to the surface and see what the hell's going on. It's the basic story of, you know, finding Zelda and rescuing her, and it works. The script is really, really nice and funny at times. The sexual innuendos and tension between Zelda and Link is pretty hilarious. To get around in Skyloft, you have these giant birds that you fly, and kind of like Wii Sports Resort. And like this, you know, I think I mentioned this last week. If you've played Wii Sports Resort, you've been in training for Skyward Sword, because a lot of those events that you use the Motion Plus in that game apply here. Like you bowl bombs like bowling balls, you throw bombs like basketballs, and you sword fight just like in that game. But I'll get to the sword fighting in a second. Back to the sexual innuendo, which is what I'm sure everybody wants to hear about. One of the funniest lines in the first part of the game, and I'll spoil it here just because it's too good not to. When you're about to take part in this race, this flying race on the birds against your fellow students, and so Link apparently is notorious for being lazy and sleeping in and not trying so hard. And it's obvious that Zelda, you know, kind of has a twinkle in her eye for old Link. And it's kind of funny the thing she says. She says, Link, you really got to practice hard. You're definitely not as good with bird as the other guys. You really got to practice more with your bird. And with a wink and a nudge, you won't get my blessing unless, you know, you play with your bird. And I'm just sitting in my chair rolling laughing at this thing. And my buddy Roger at work, he has the game as well, and he said, "Well, I didn't even notice any of that." And I said, "How did you not notice?" Because he'll be listening to this right now, and I just thought that the dialogue was so funny, and I hope it was an intentional little like wink and nod to the people who were paying attention to those things, because it's really funny. And so I'll finally talk about the Motion Plus part of Zelda. The sword play is much like what you have in, again, Wii Sports Resort. It's as close to one-to-one movement as you're going to get. It's very satisfying to be able to slash in multiple directions. Whatever way you hold the Wii remote is exactly how Link holds it on screen, right down to the smallest little details. Like if you twist your wrist just left to right, Link will also twist his sword left to right, and I don't think angling the blade matters in terms of how much damage you do, but it's a really cool little thing that you have that level of detail to kind of immerse yourself with. It's the real deal. If you've been waiting for a real Motion Plus game to sink into, you know, this is really it. The swordplay, I will say one thing about it. It's kind of cool in that they balance it out with the shield, because in a lot of Zelda games, you can use the shield kind of, you know, you'll never get hurt as long as you have a shield out. But in this game, the shield degrades over time with the more damage it takes. And it's all part of the upgrade system, kind of extra RPG elements that they've thrown into Zelda, which is, you know, RPG light anyway. But what you can do is go around the world, and as you defeat enemies and you can find this stuff, are materials that you can use to upgrade your shield and upgrade your slingshot, and, you know, basically everything that you use you can upgrade using materials. And it's a really cool mechanic, and makes you think a little more about what you want to use, what you want to carry, and how and and what you want to bring with you when you're about to enter a temple. So, you know, you may have upgraded your wooden shield, but it's still not going to do you much good in a lava level when things are spitting fire at you. So, you know, it adds a little more element of RPG, which is really cool. So on the whole, you know, so far Zelda has been a really great game. I'm not used to the level of solitude that you have, because it is really just you. The town is very sparse with people. So, you know, I've been playing games like Assassin's Creed, and where, you know, the cities are just full of people. And going back to Zelda actually was a bit of a difference, because you're really on your own. You know, trying to find Zelda, you're the chosen one to solve the mystery. So it's a little bit of a departure for me from those other games. Oh, one more thing about the Motion Plus. Since you have the nunchuck, you only have one analog stick to move around with, and as opposed to something like Assassin's Creed, where you have two, of course, one to look around and one to walk and move. So I found it at first pretty weird to not be able to point around my Wii remote as a directional pointer, which you can when you go into first person mode in this thing called you basically use it like a flashlight in first person, where you can scan almost like a, is it called dousing? That's what it's called. It's called dousing, where you point the remote at the screen, you move it around and look around, and it'll beep at you when you're focused on your target. And that might be a long distance away, but at least it gives you a sense of direction of where you're going. And I haven't played my Wii in a long time, so it was definitely a different thing having to press Z all the time to refocus my view in front of me. Without having to be able to look around whenever I wanted to. But it's a minor gripe, only because, you know, it just only has one analog stick. So, that's about all I've been playing. What do you guys think?
What have you been playing this week, Pat? Or last couple weeks, months, however long we've been gone?
I think we've only been, 2 weeks, something like that?
3 weeks, I don't know.
We've been gone forever, but we're back. Interesting listening to all that Zelda stuff there, John. It's really tantalizing me to actually finally, after I don't know what the heck it is, 14 months, plug my Wii back in, you know? It's definitely inspired me to do so, but I don't know if I will. I mean, Kinect does it for me. Bruce, last time you were saying you're probably going to pick it up or what, the Zelda?
Yeah, I'll pick up Skyward Sword. I'm thinking my two goals for, like, our winter break and then on into January is probably gasp and surprise, pick up MW3 for PC. If my PC keeps being a piece of shit about recording this show, I may just beat it with a hammer. And I'll probably pick up Skyward Sword for the Wii, but I'm trying to time my Skyward Sword purchase so that I don't mentally sit there and compare it to Skyrim. Which is completely unfair and would be stupid, because it's Zelda. It's been Zelda forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, as many cool things as John mentioned, it's still Zelda. But it's an experience I want, and it's an experience I want to have fun with, but it's not one I want to follow a massive, hardcore, lot of fun, you know, Western RPG with. So, I plan to pick it up at some point. But the good news is we have enough folks around here that are still getting a kick out of playing Wii Sports and crap like that our Wii's plugged in, and it's back over here at this house. So, you know, so I could play it. I just haven't decided. I'll probably leave it on the old crappy 27-inch TV out there, because, like John said, it's not HD, so there's no point.
Doesn't really
no
matter.
No point in dragging it in here.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Wow.
I think you should pick it up. Didn't you play the last couple? Did you play Twilight Princess and Wind Waker?
Wind Waker. Yeah, I played Wind Waker on the GameCube and Twilight Princess. Like I was saying last time there, John, you know, the thing I'm interested in is the differences. I liked Twilight Princess a lot, but, you know, it was a GameCube game that they did a very good job of tacking on motion control to it. It worked very well, but it still wasn't one-to-one like this one. It still wasn't that well done. So that's what I'm really interested in, is the technical, mostly controls, you know, the difference between the two games. And, you know, do you think there's a big difference, or is there not much in playing the first one, their Twilight Princess, versus the one now that's actually made for the Wii? Is there a noticeable difference?
Well, there's a difference. Well, see, it's kind of depends on how you mean for a difference. And now that I've played it for another week, I can expand on what I meant, what I said last week, in that, like, this game kind of forces you to think about your movement in a much more specific way, because in Twilight Princess you basically replace button presses by a waggle. So whatever direction you were, you know, it didn't really make a difference if you shook your hand or pressed the A button in a certain sense. In this one, most of the enemies require you to swipe at them horizontally, vertically, diagonally, stab them forward toward the screen, all depending on what their weak point might be available. So the combat is a lot different in that sense, in that you have to be a lot more specific. And then in tandem with the shield stuff, you really kind of have to be a little more strategic in what and how you do the combat. And I think it's definitely a great thing about this game. What's also cool about it is that you won't be like, wow, what a difference, because it's so natural that you kind of just do it. You know what I mean?
Yep. Well, sounds is definitely, if there's ever a game that's going to make me plug in my Wii again after 13 months, this is the game.
Yeah. But, so are you thinking about purchasing it?
Yeah.
Or are you okay?
Not right away though. I might even wait, give it a bit of a wait and see. I still got quite a bit of stuff on the 3DS, and I've got some Xbox games and stuff like that. So definitely buy it, I think. But when is the question?
Well, I think I'm in the same boat. And you know, another reason quickly that I forgot was, before the Wii completely goes away and you know gets replaced by the Wii U, I kind of want to actually play a real game experience on it, you know, I think Zelda would be a good one just to see how the motion control works. You know, Wii Sports and all that fun stuff, I can tell that it's, you know, that the motion control is good,
yeah.
You know. I don't think, after having played with the Wii, I'd notice any difference between, you know, older Wii motion games and the Wii Plus or the Sony Move or any of that crap, because I'm just not that, I'm just too damn dense. But I think Skyward Sword would be probably a good one to see how the Wii does with a different type of game. And I'm kind of like you. The more I got to thinking about it after my original answers, yeah, God only knows when I'll pick it up. But I do plan on picking it up.
Yeah, I mean you're right. I mean it is Zelda. Like there's not a what you know the point of the game, the storyline is not nothing's really a big surprise so far. It's just it's a solid gameplay.
Exactly. So what have you been playing, Patrick,
okay,
now that we've got what you might play out
it's
of the way?
All what we've been playing episode, because I got quite a bit too, but that's all right. I'll try to go through it.
I'll tear it up.
Okay, well, much like John, I'm finishing off. Well, John, you finished Super Mario 3D Land. I'm on the very end of it. I've kind of been sidetracked by a game I'll get into a little later on, but almost done Super Mario 3D Land. I won't get into it too much because, John, you did a good job talking about it, and you're further along anyways than me. I said it before, I say the game. This is the game that will make you buy a 3DS, colorful, fun, classic Mario, and the 3D is very much over the top and really well done. And, hell, it's only $39 when console games are $60 or $65, so check that out. That's all I'll say about Super Mario. I did download, just yesterday, a demo for GoldenEye 007, 007 on Xbox 360. No, no, no. This is not the GoldenEye from the N64. It's not a remake, or is it an update, or a reboot, or anything like that. It's not developed by Rare, or what the hell's left of them these days. But it is a game that was originally on the Nintendo Wii, came out, I guess, last Christmas, I think, or somewhere around then, that loosely follows the events of the movie GoldenEye 007. And it also has, I have to admit, from what I played, some very loose moments that are similar to the original N64 classic GoldenEye 007. So that's kind of neat. Such as, you know, the very beginning of the game, or at least the very beginning of the demo, where it pans exactly the same and is more or less starting the exact same location as the N64 game did, with the exact same buildings and layout. So that's kind of interesting, a little throwback to it. It's a decent demo, definitely. But you can see that it's a Wii game. Yeah, they upgraded the graphics and all, and they've put it into HD. I'm pretty sure it's 1080p. But it's based on a Wii's engine, right? Running in high def. So it's got a lot of competition on the 360. Really, it may have been one of the best shooters on the Wii, but that doesn't mean anything when you bump over to game like PC or Xbox 360. I mean, it's smooth and it's okay to look at. I'm not going to say it sucks, but it's overmatched by the Battlefields, Gears of Wars, and Halos. It just is, you know? It's fun to play, though, because you get some of that nostalgia, but it's not a remake, right? So there's new stuff going on in locations that are similar to the movie and the original game. The big problem with this demo isn't really the graphics, isn't that it's not made by Rare. It's that the demo is so friggin' short. Especially some of the demo is completely on-rail shooting. So, you know, why such a short demo? It was one part of one level. I'm probably going to say maybe, and I don't even think half of the first level, and that's it. And then it goes into buy it, blah, 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 you know. It was weird. Maybe it's a time. Maybe it's based on time. I don't know. But, you know, it was too short for me to say whether it was a good game or whatever. But it was okay. Check it out if you need some more GoldenEye love and you don't have a Wii, because, you know, this Wii point is all we're, port is all we're going to get. So it's not bad. Try it. You know, maybe I'll try it again, but it's too short of a demo. They needed to give more. But not bad. Check it out. Also, on Xbox 360, for some bizarre, demented reason, I downloaded another Kinect demo. Why do I keep trying these types of Kinect games? I do not know. The Twister on Kinect. It would be a fun party game, great for a bunch of young people, especially drunken people. Basically, you play Virtual Twister, and also you do all sorts of other mini games, somewhat like that game Hole in the Wall that I talked about before, and all sorts of strange things that can make a 200-plus pound Pac-Man fall on his ass and cry in pain. So, this is something for kids that would be great and flexible, fit adults. And that sure as hell is not me. So, moving on from that brand new game that I've played this week that I'm sure lots of people are interested in, Mario Kart 7 for the 3DS. Another good value, $39.99, you know, compared to other $60 games out there. It's, the first thing I really noticed about the game was interesting, and G will like this, and Glazenator will like this, is it's a very nice-sounding game. The audio was done very nicely, you know, coming out of the tiny 3DS speakers. I mean, it's not like you're playing this on your 5.1 surround system like I do on my Xbox, so it's all relatively speaking here, right? But the audio coming out of those two tiny 3DS speakers was impressive for what it was. You know, it's the same old Mario Kart sound effects and similar music, but it's well done, and it's well done for a handheld system, that's for sure. The second thing that I kind of noticed in the game was it has less, quote-unquote, less 3D. I guess what I mean by that is it's less intense, or they toned down the 3D, almost more to the extent of Zelda on the 3DS, how they did it with that. Compared to Super Mario Land 3DS, there's definitely a difference in the 3D effects. It's there, definitely there and interesting, but not as much in your face. They're definitely not using it to showcase the 3D like they did Super Mario Land 3DS. But, you know, that might be a good thing considering it's a racing game, you know. With more, the more subtle 3D in the background and foreground doesn't distract you when you're driving as much as I think it would if it was popping out in your face. So, I'm not sure if that's why they did it, but it definitely seems to help make sense. It's still pretty cool, though. You know, it's the seventh Mario Kart game. So, you know, even though it's the same song and dance over and over again, although it's the seventh game with the same premise, the same gameplay, more or less the same characters, maybe a new one here and one takeout, Who the fuck cares? It's Mario Kart. If after 7 Mario Karts you don't like this fun, ultra-popular game series that goes all the way back to the Super Nintendo, don't play it. It's that simple, really. It's not going to change for you. That's how it is and how it's always been, and that's how the millions of people that like it for. So, you know, those that bought it, you're going to like it. There's a few new things in the game. I guess you could say, what's new? It's Mario Kart. Well, I mean, they do have new tracks, as I believe 16 all-new tracks. I think it's 16. And then there's also 16 of the classic ones, ranging from the Super Nintendo to the Wii. Even these have been modified and changed to use the new things like the underwater elements and the hand glider and stuff like that that have been introduced in Mario Kart 7. To be honest, both the hand glider and the underwater stuff, they don't change gameplay a lot. I mean, it's nice to be flying above, you know, and you can control it, control the hand glider. The underwater levels, in a way, they look cool, but they slow down the race, which, if you're using the 50cc carts, you're going slow enough to begin with. But, you know, that's new, too, in there, and it's pretty good. At least it's not exactly the same as every other Mario Kart game before it, I guess. But like I say, it's the same fun, addictive game with a bunch of new tracks, and of course, it's in 3D. So, I've not gone online yet. Apparently, the online is pretty darn good. Some people have gone as far to say it's the best online experience on Nintendo. That's not saying much. It probably still sucks compared to on the Xbox or on Steam. But it's good to know they're at least getting a little better. I've not played the balloon fight bursting levels, whatever they are. I've never been a huge fan of those, going back to the first time it was introduced in Mario Kart. But it might be cool if you could do that online and have fun. The coin challenge level, I haven't tried that either. So basically, I've just been playing the single player races right now. But, you know, it's very, very fun. It's, you know, $39 for a great Mario Kart game. So, you know, and fun, you know, boys and girls, that's ultimately why we play video games in the first place. So without a doubt, I'm enjoying Mario Kart 7, and I recommend it to anybody who enjoys Mario Kart games. Aside from that, I think that's pretty much everything I remember that I've been playing over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I gotta talk about MOH, or you think they're sick of it because I talked about it so much.
Yeah, sure. No, good idea. Thank you for reminding me. It's been a... I shall. So anyway...
Well, I just was curious either way.
Well,
I mean,
cool.
If
yeah,
you don't want to.
I totally forgot. Thanks. Listener of the show by the name of Stinky Wombat and I have traded games before. I think the last game he has played of mine is Homefront. Anyways, I got Homefront back the other day, and with it came along a copy of Medal of Honor. So I got to get my hands on that game. It came out last holiday season. Is that when it came out, Bruce? I think somewhere around there.
Actually, before. Somewhere, it came out smashed in between Bad Company 2 and Black Ops.
Okay.
Because EA is a bunch of fucking idiots.
So it's been a while. It came out, I don't know, 13, 14 months ago. But
yeah,
if you guys remember, you have great memories, and maybe you have. Bruce enjoyed the game very much, and I probably would have bought it had it not been in between the, you know, with all the Halo Reaches and the Black Ops and the Bad Company 2 and blah, blah, blah. I probably would have picked it up, but I didn't. Playing it now, it's not the game's fault that I've been oversaturated with modern-day shooters set in locations with the modern weapons and stuff. It's not the game's fault, so I'm trying to push that aside as to yet another modern shooter, especially when I'm still playing a lot of Battlefield 3 recently and online. So doing my best to get that out of the way and say, you know, I'm having fun with it. I have to admit that at first, Medal of Honor, when you're running around the alleys and the tight quarters, it gave me a bit of a feel of Homefront, which I sort of didn't like. The hurry up and wait and get to the door and wait for your squad to show up. And sometimes you can open the door, but sometimes you have to wait for the squad member to do it for you kind of thing. I didn't really like that at the beginning, but that was pretty short. It was, you know, I was like, oh, I hope the game opens up. And it did literally open up. It opens up into the mountains, for God's sake. That's a pretty open environment. So at the beginning, I was kind of iffy about it. It's not bad, but it's not great. Then I got into parts in the mountains, and it's pretty cool, pretty fun. I enjoyed the helicopter level. There's a pretty good helicopter level. The sniping level was good. Got a couple achievements on that. So overall, Medal of Honor, so far, pretty solid title. You know, I don't think I'd want to now, at least, pay $60 for a full price. I got it for free, and if it's free, it's for me. But I'd recommend this for any shooter fan in a discount bin, you know, half price, $30 or less. Check it out. How far am I? I'm at the part now where my helicopter crashes. I think I'm a ranger trying to rescue people. My helicopter's gone down. All hell is breaking loose. I don't know. It's probably at least more than halfway done the game. But, yeah, I'm enjoying it. Started off a little slow, but it's pretty good. It's not my favorite shooter, but it's definitely worth either a rental or a discount price for me.
You're about three quarters of the way through it.
Okay.
And that chunk you're about to play and the airfield mission are taken from actual events.
Okay.
Some of the other stuff is kind of just, you know, tagged in there. I cannot verify that it's taken from actual events, but are you talking about where you fall off the helicopter?
This is... Well, jump off? It was after that.
Yeah, where you have to jump off and hit by an RPG.
After that, we're going... The Rangers go to find those guys, and they get shot down, and there's a little cutscene. You're inside the helicopter, and you start flying around almost like free-falling, and there's bullets everywhere, so yeah.
Yeah, you're getting fairly close to the end. But all of that was taken from actual things that happened on in Afghanistan on a mountain known as Takagar, which I still don't think we have the coalition forces have control of. It's pretty much straight them down in Al Qaeda One. So you've done the Navy SEAL stealth mission?
Which was a Navy SEAL stealth mission. There was a
the one where you land, where you fall out of the helicopter.
Oh yeah. And you got to get the guy with the knife at the beginning and crawl down and that one.
What did you think of the stealth aspects on that? Because that was one of the things that you don't see in a lot of the modern shooters. I mean, we saw it a little bit in Modern Warfare 2.
It was good because it wasn't super, super stealthy, and it wasn't super long. For me, I don't like the stealthy games. Like, I hated the ones, what were those ones that came out back of the GameCube era? Tom Clancy ones, where if you made one mistake, you had to start.
No, not Tom Clancy. You're thinking of Splinter Cell?
Splinter Cell, there you go, yeah. Splinter Cell ones where I'm climbing up a wall and my little toe gets hit by the spotlight and it's game over. Like, that just drove me crazy. But this wasn't bad, and it was cool because, you know, that's what you would do if you fell out of the helicopter and all you have a knife. You're going to be hiding mostly, and you're going to be sneaking up behind people. And so I died a couple times in that just because, you know, I wasn't listening to the other guy who kind of was watching around, right? It's like, yeah, there's a squad of four guys, don't engage, and I run in and I engage them. And then the second time, it's like, okay, oh, he said don't engage. So I went up on the hill beside them, let them pass, and went by them, right? So it had stealth, but it also had elements in it. I mean, I shot the two guys on the cliff, and I did whatever. So I liked it. That's the kind of stealth I can deal with. One or two sections in a game where you're being stealthy, but it's not unforgiving, ridiculous stealth. You know, there's still combat involved. There's still thinking involved, and it's not the entire game. So I liked it. What did you think of it? You liked it?
I thought it was perfect because it tied into the game. Like, in Modern Warfare 2, that section when you were with Price and you're having to sneak along as snipers before you meet up with the other, that always seemed like it was forced to me. Like, oh, we need a stealth section. I mean, I enjoyed it, and it was kind of forgiving. It was kind of a little more forgiving. You could get away with a little more, it always seemed like. Whereas, if you don't listen to the dude you have to find's instructions, you're going to get rimmed in the butt. You're going to get reamed. Hardcore. I had the same thing happen to me. Didn't listen to him. Yeah, sure. You know, and did the Web 2.0 kitty thing. Stepped out there and, like, you know, was so full of lead they could have used me to fucking anchor a boat.
Wow.
You know, and I think I only died twice, but there's one section there where if you, like, kill all the guys without alerting them, There's like 8 or 9 of them.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, I got hard-headed about that and just kept resetting until I finally got it done. I don't even think there was an achievement or anything attached to it.
No,
I think it was just four of.
I think. Is that the one?
Well, no, I don't think there is.
Well, I got an achievement doing it. I get them all in headshots, so I don't know if it was a, like, I think it's 7. You mean they're down kind of and he goes up on the hill and
you gotta take two
guys on a bridge first or something and
Yeah.
I got something when I did it, whether it was for doing it or whether, like, I just coincidentally got all of them with headshots too, right? So maybe it was a headshot counter achievement. There was something that I locked. I'm not sure what it was, though.
Yeah, I definitely never felt, I mean, now, yeah, because there's no online component to it, and I thought the online was really great. I see some of the things that they played with in Medal of Honor in Battlefield 3 now, some of the aspects of it. You know, yeah, it was, to me, it was a $60 value, even though I pretty much bought it because it was somewhat newish, you know, even though it was crammed headfirst in between. Hey, I forgot Halo Reach came out, too.
Yeah.
It was Halo Reach, Black Ops, you know.
Battlefield, Bad Company or something.
Yeah, and then Bad Company 2. No, Bad Company 2 had been out. We bought the Vietnam expansion.
Yeah, something. There was definitely quite a few choices. That's why I didn't buy it.
Yeah, and so, but I think part of what made me love it more than a lot of reviewers and average gamers is just the fact that I had already read the history connected to it, you know, too. I don't think I've ever spoken about that, but that's enough about Medal of Honor. I'm glad you're enjoying it. It's like, when I saw you boot it up, I thought, oh dear God, I've talked about how much I love this game so much, and it's like, I hope he doesn't go in thinking, you know, I hope he understands, you know. And it sounds like you did the same thing I did, in the fact that I just set aside every other game I'd played.
No.
You know, which I hate. I'm not going to bang on them for it, but I think in a lot of cases people didn't. You know, I just set aside all these other games that I've been playing and just played it for what it was. And for what it was, yeah, it's nothing that's going to change the first-person shooter genre, and it was not, you know, game of the year material by any means, but it was a good, solid title.
Yep.
And I didn't think it needed a story. Yeah, the first part you're talking about, I like that. I like the narrow set, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
But yeah, the do I kick the door, do you kick the door thing. It almost felt like that Danger Close did that first map and went, you know, we can't do this throughout the entire game, or people are going to get pissed at us.
Yeah.
But they didn't throw it out either.
Yeah.
Because I got tired of that in Homefront. As much as I like the Homefront single player, I got really fucking tired of that.
Hey, look, there's a fridge in front of the door, but I can't. I have to wait for this guy to show up to move it for me.
Yeah, meanwhile, I'm getting shot.
Yeah. But interesting to see now, Medal of Honor 2 was teased with our Battlefield 3 purchase. There was a little card there. So, interesting to see what they do. I know it didn't sell as well as the Halos and the Call of Duties, but, you know, interesting to see what they've done with the game, definitely.
After what they did this year with, and Peter Moore was running his mouth this week, I have no hopes for it. While I don't think Battlefield 3 was the COD clone that some people are trying to claim, because, you know, they actually put a story in it for once, I just have no hope for it, because EA has just decided that they're going to battle with Activision and be stupid. You know, I mean, I hope it ends up being a good game. We'll see who develops it. I haven't heard too much about it. We'll see how much DICE has to do with it. So, but anyways, what I've been playing. Well, it really comes down to basically three games, and one that we were going to cover in news, but it's right, this show's going, I don't think there's going to be any news. Let's do that one first. And you know what, in actuality, screw it, we won't even do that as a news story. I'll do it right here in what I've been playing. Cam Ruffle was on Twitter, or going through my RSS reader while looking for news for the show. This company has remastered, with the blessing of Bungie, from as near as I can tell, the Marathon series of games. Now, if you don't know what Marathon and the sequels were, these were some of the first, if not the first, games that Bungie, the creators of Halo, ever made. And there's a website which I will post with the podcast post. You can now pick up Marathon 2 Durandal, and Marathon Infinity at this website, completely free, runs on Windows. I'm running Windows 7 64-bit on my new PC. Runs really good. Marathon 1 doesn't really run, but that's the fault of my graphics card, and I'm just too lazy to fix it. And so I've been playing through those. I'm not really going to tell you what they're like. I just think if you're a Bungie fan, and especially a younger Bungie fan, and want to see how Bungie got its start, maybe possibly see one or two things in there that, oh, you know, they might have used this in Halo, or they learned to do this for Halo. I definitely recommend picking them up. I think at most the zip files you download are like 100 megabytes each, or at most are 108 megabytes. I can't remember specifically, but it's not like they're hard drive eaters. And they're a lot of fun. And according to the site, when you actually go there, this ALF1 website, Marathon Infinity, there's still people playing it multiplayer. I haven't even installed Marathon Infinity yet because I'm playing Durandal. But if you're a Bungie fan and consider yourself a hardcore Bungie fan, you got a little bit of hard drive space, maybe you should pick them up. I've been having fun with them, like I said. Also been playing still a lot of Minecraft, just building worlds. I mean, there's a reason it's sold the amount of copies it has. There's a reason they had their own convention. It's just a great time waster. I mean, it's almost like Solitaire from the Windows 95 era, except a shit ton better. So I'm always playing Minecraft, sometimes making new worlds, sometimes hanging out on the online server that Glacinator and some of his college buddies have. And, of course, Battlefield 3 at nights, as many nights as I can fit in with our very own Patman and Audio Master G, although with the Xbox Live update that we had the other night, playing Battlefield 3 was even more comical than usual, although fun once we got in. I'm starting to notice a trend with Battlefield 3, and I vaguely recall it being pretty much this way in almost every other Battlefield game. You'll go through nights where you do really well and you win a lot of matches, and you feel like a stud. And then you will go through a couple nights after that where you get your ass beat, and you get on the retarded monkey team, and just get your ass beat senseless. I'm kind of dropping back to the strategy that I've used in probably every Battlefield game. If we're playing as a team, I try and stick with the guys as much as possible. But when it appears that we're going to be on a deathmatch playing monkey team when we're actually playing Conquest, I tend to try and just maximize as many points as I can get. So you can de-evolve to the strategy of just getting in a Jeep and driving from flag to 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 flag, trying to get as many flag captures as possible. I wouldn't recommend this if you're on a team that's actually winning and is understands that you have to play defense a little bit. But still, Battlefield 3, it's the perfect multiplayer for me. Always has been, probably always will be. Although, if you heard me a little bit earlier in this marathon session of what we've been playing, I do intend to pick up Modern Warfare 3, probably just for the single player, but, you know, it's not like I don't play other shooters. And then finally, and this one's going to be even worse because it had to go another week, I am still playing Skyrim. I have beaten the main storyline. I have beaten a lot of the secondary storylines, minus one, which Bethesda you need to fix, because I need a certain fort to reset so I can actually finish the companion storyline. Those of you that have played the game know what I'm talking about. It appears to only be happening on 360, and some of the quick fixes that they can get away with on PC, you can't do on the console, which is fair enough. But so I actually think that Skyrim might be the first game in my history of owning an Xbox, history of owning a console, period, I might actually 100% complete, meaning get all the achievements, that 100% complete. There's just no possible way to 100% complete to everything you could possibly do in Skyrim. Right now, I'm kind of got into blacksmithing and creating new armor, so I've got like the highest possible armor score you can have, 100. Got a couple other hundreds in places. I've got like 10 achievements left. And I'm still not bored of it. That's the thing. My save says I've played 115 hours, and I'm still not bored of it. There still feels like so much to do. Even in days when I'm just really not feeling like putting up with doing quests, I can, you know, work on, basically, for lack of a better term, jobs, whether it's blacksmithing, alchemy, potions, enchanting, this, that, and the other thing. you know, I don't think I own all the houses you can possibly own in the game yet, so I could always work on that. I mean, and that's a hilarious thing. It's why I kind of backtracked when I was talking about Zelda, because I don't really want to ruin the Zelda experience in non-HD by playing it so close to Skyrim. And that's nothing against Skyrim or Zelda. That's just the way my brain works. I'd hate to, kind of like Patrick was talking about Medal of Honor, I want to be able to put any other RPG I've been playing aside so I can enjoy Zelda for Zelda, because it is Zelda. But if you're an art, as I said in the last couple shows, and including the screw-up never-recorded show last week, if you have ever played an RPG and enjoyed it, you're probably going to want to pick up Skyrim at some point. Even if you're flat broke now, get it in Game of Year Edition. Hell, I don't even know what the frickin', I don't even know what the frickin' DLC is going to be for it yet. Don't really care either. I probably will buy it at some point, but it's just one of those games. I mean, I said in the first show I talked about it that it felt MMO-like, and it's still completely and totally true. It is just the closest single-player experience to an MMO I think you'll ever run across, at least now. Although, Bethesda is talking about making an Elder Scrolls MMO, and as I told these guys before we started the show proper, if that happens, it's been nice knowing you. And on that note, that's all I've been playing this week. Okay, our discussion topic this week, and we're redoing the discussion topic and the Audio Master G question, because we like to get all those things in. Our discussion topic last week kind of confused the guys at first, and not so much confused, but made them go, oh, I don't want to do that, I don't want to talk about this, until I explained it. Basically, I'm getting sick and tired of John Risitello, CEO of EA, and Bobby Kotick, CEO of Activision, bitching back and forth at each other like small children. I was going to say little girls, but, well, there, I did. Okay, I'm a pig. So, this has nothing to do with anything they've said recently from either company, even though Peter Moore, COO of EA, said something extremely stupid this week as well. So, what I have decided is we're going to have a dork, geek, nerd, idiot CEO fight to the death. This is hypothetical, people, although if it really happened and somebody got an underground pay-per-view of it, I'd love them forever. So basically, these guys are going to tell me the style of fight that Risitello and Kotick will have, who the winner is, whether either of them survive it, all that fun stuff. You'll get it when John does his, because we already know what John's going to say, because he said it last week and it was funny as hell, I promise. John, take it away.
Oh no, I've been built up too high. So anyway,
yeah. Would you like me to do, would you like me to make it worse?
No, that's fine. So I when Bruce talked about it last week, I was a bit confused at first, and the more I thought about it, I thought the best way to approach a drag out fight between two people in terms of bring it down to what I know, and that's pro wrestling. And so I imagined the fight from the perspective of an announcer, someone like Jim Ross or Michael Cole. And without further ado, welcome to the Clash of the Game Titans, a no-holds-barred contest where winner takes the vacated championship after Mr. Miyamoto announced his retirement earlier this week. First to the ring is John Risitello. He truly believes the ring is his battlefield. Seems to me he should watch his overconfidence, as his opponent Kotick is super fast. He moves like a blur in there at times. Kotick is here to command and conquer, but overconfidence could be either of these guys' pitfall. No matter what happens, I can tell you this won't last long. So Risitello, oh, he gets the early advantage after the lockup. He counters Kotick's Guitar Hero gut wrench into a Rock Band slam. Uh-oh, Kotick is in trouble early, so Risitello is on the attack with the EA Sports Stomp. NBA, NHL, FIFA, NASCAR, Madden, it's incredible. Risitello thinks it's already over, and he's setting up Kotick for his finisher, the Mirror's Edge. But wait, from the crowd is Tony Hawk, and he's nailed Risitello from behind with a skateboard. It's incredible. Kotick has recovered, and he staggers over and hits the Call of Duty Death Drop. Kaboom! It's all over, folks. 1, 2, 3. Your winner and the new champion, Bobby Kotick. Incredible that Tony Hawk would be the saboteur in Risitello's plan all along. This is a real pressure cooker of a feud, folks, and it'll be a crisis of epic proportions at the rematch at War Games. Good night.
You did that. Now, little insider knowledge, audience. Now, I was peeing, because that's what I usually do during this segment, for part of that. But the third I heard was verbatim. Now, I want you to tell the audience, and I want you to be honest. Did you script yourself, or is that actually off the top of your head like it was last week? Because it was brilliant either way.
Well, I wanted it to be a little more polished and throw in a few more game names into the mix. So while I was waiting for us to start before the show, I just typed up something quick.
Still, doesn't matter. It was brilliant. Patrick?
Okay, well...
Oh, I thought you were going to go, no way.
definitely good, and we know for sure. I mean, I've heard both versions, John, and your scripted one was just as... Or your non-scripted one last week was just as good. So basically what we got here, in my opinion, you got two CEOs who are really sounding, like you kind of said there, Bruce, like girls. I'm not going to say little girls. I'm going to say two little bitches, really, you know? They're having one big PMS bitch fest over the internet as to whose game is better and whose game runs at 60 frames per second and whose game's going to outsell whose and whose game is so unoriginal that it's going to go the death of Tony Hawk, blah, blah, blah. They sound like a bunch of women. So, you know, it dawned upon me the perfect way for these two to settle it, because they're acting like bitches and women, is a bra and panties match in the middle of the ring. You know, I could see both of them walking to the ring within their bras and panties. You got one with Activision written on the back of their panties and the other one with EA on the bra. You know, it's probably a pretty brutal match. A lot of hair pulling and a lot of that silly slapping that you see the girls doing on each other. As a matter of fact, they probably both get turned spanking each other in the ring on their knees like naughty little schoolgirls, because that's how they're acting in the real world, you know? This match goes on, and it goes on, just like their Twitter fights go on and go on, until finally Mark Henry's old theme music kicks up. That's right, Sexual Chocolate comes into the ring. The problem is, he mistakes them both for real women, because that's how they're acting anyways, and the lights go off, and Sexual Chocolate has his way with them, and that is the end.
I'm going to say it just like I did last week. I'm going to say it just like I did last week. The only thing that is missing is somehow working in Rikishi's stink-faced finisher. Yep. Now, last week, the one that we recorded that didn't record, I did a quick one, rather horrible one, to give these guys an idea what I was talking about. I'm not going to do that one this week. I've got a better one. Now, if you folks think about it, we see all the time on the internet, matter of fact, we saw it in our own little group of the WPO clan, of people calling games shit when they've never played them. You see this. You can go to any forum connected to any gaming site in the world, and you see this. And as far as I'm concerned, that's what Risatello and Kotak do all the time. They call each other's game shit when neither of them has probably played them. So here's what I'm going to have them do. This isn't going to be too violent or physical at first. No, basically they will be given, and I'm not being biased against the console, so shut up, they will be given two identical top-of-the-line Alienware gaming rigs. Kotak will be sat down in front of all of the battlefields. All of them. That includes 2142, which a lot of people don't consider in the Battlefield lineage. And at the other identical gaming PC, Risatello will be sat down, and he'll have to play all of the CODs, including the Treyarch ones. I'm not going to throw Treyarch under the bus again. We do it enough as it is. Now, if either of them attempts to quit before the game is over, a well-placed sniper will end them. It's that simple. But if they both complete every COD game and every Battlefield game and still think the other's games suck, well, then at least they can have a legitimate bitch against the other. But it does not save them. No, no. Then, to tie in the wrestling theme, they will be put in a Hell in a Cell with Undertaker in his prime and Mick Foley as either Cactus Jack or Mick Foley, whichever you prefer, in their prime. And let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, ain't either of them walking out of there looking pretty. If you thought Foley's original fall off the top of the cell was bad, wait until you see these two flabby jackass CEOs do it, not once, not twice, but probably three or four times, especially if I'm the one writing the match script. So, because it really comes down to these two bitch piss and moan like a couple little fanboys who have never set foot in either one's game, from what I can tell. And on top of that, I wasn't going to top John's, and I really wasn't. And I wasn't going to top Patrick's. I mean, Patrick's basically hinting at evil, nasty things that the Bible has spoken about being done to the two CEOs by Mark Henry. I'm really hoping we get a cease and desist letter out of this. At the end of the show, Patrick will give you away. You could send us your CEO Dork Fight Deathmatch. Actually, I kind of like that title.
Dork Fight Deathmatch. That's not bad.
Hmm.
Does it need the CEO in it though to denote that we're doing it to jackasses who really have no business? It needs to be CEO Dork Fight Deathmatch. That's going on the banner. It's going to be hard to fit on there, but it's going on the banner for this week. Patrick will tell you how you can do it at the end of the show. The whole point in doing this, folks, is the fact that we're so sick and tired of them talking and them ruining our game experiences. I still hold that part of the reason Medal of Honor didn't do as well as it could have was EA's marketing department and people like Risatello releasing it at the absolute most horrible wrong time for a new franchise or a franchise being rebooted, all in some egotistical play to try and steal some of Call of Duty's market share, which at this point probably isn't really going to happen. And people are just sick and tired of listening to them talk. So as far as I'm concerned, they should take up one of our three options to settle it once and for all. And if we happen to lose both of them, well, I got news for you. The CEO idiot firms have probably got a bumper crop. They'll just replace them with something just as bad, or if not worse. All right, so that's been our kind of fun little discussion topic. I'm glad it held together for 2 weeks in a row. Let's move on to Audio Master G. He's got a question this week. It's actually a question about charity, and it's a really good question. How do I know this? Because we've now done it 2 weeks in a row. See, I'm stealing all of Patrick's thunder. He used to piss me off when we did this shit. No, I'm just doing it. Fuck it. So take it away, Audio Master G.
Got a price. Hey, Audio Master G here. How is the WPO crew doing? In 2003, and on the same date of the recording of this week's episode, WonderPod number 90, November 24th, Penny Arcade founded the charity Child's Play. I know Bruce has spoken about this fantastic charity that organizes the donations of toys and games to hospitals to improve the lives of sick children worldwide. And fortunately, it is not the only gaming-related charity out there. I stumbled across an article a little while back, and I'll send you along a link. The following comes from the article, and I quote, "The Entertainment Software Association Foundation's 14th annual Night to Night for Kids Gala raised $900,000 to support the foundation's work on behalf of America's youth. The proceeds from the annual dinner, auction, and charity casino night will enable the ESA Foundation to improve the lives of children through grants to a wide variety of organizations, as well as college scholarship programs. I bring this up not to question these charities, rather to provide awareness that they exist. My question this week is more about perception of gamers amongst the general population. Do you think that such positive contributions and philanthropy from groups like Child's Play and the ESA helps remove negative stereotypes of gamers? Is this something we as a community should address or just leave alone? Regardless of the selfless intent behind the purpose of such organizations, should those gaming industries involved make an effort to advertise the fact that they do this, or just remain humble? I mean, on one side, you create further awareness that the charity exists, which can provide more income for the cause. But on the other side, you might come across as self-serving by tooting your own horn. Anyways, I'm going to let you guys get to it. Audio Master G, out.
$1 million man. Will be fun.
Oh, G-Man, the Audio Master G, thank you once again, as always, for your questions and your comments and your links that most of the time I don't click on. But, thank you anyways. Yes, I mean, it's the right time of year to be talking about charities, isn't it? And it's great that there's Entertainment Software Association, you know, their 14th annual thing there, and they've raised $900,000. That's insane. That's great. You know, and of course, Child's Play. We've talked about this over and over again. It's really good. You can. I don't use Child's Play because my children's hospital is actually in the same city that I'm in, and I've donated to them, and just money wise. But it's a great way to do it. A great way for gamers and people in the industry and in the like video games to give back. You know, so all of this is great. When you ask me, do I think that these contributions and philanthropy, you know, they remove negative stereotypes of gamers? Well, I'd have to say I personally don't think, as far as charity is concerned, as far as giving is concerned, I don't think that gamers really have a bad rep in that aspect. I mean, I've never heard of someone say, oh, you're a gamer, you're a cheap son of a bitch. I've never heard anybody say, you know, you're a gamer, you hate children, or you'll never help anyone, or you'll never give to charity. I've heard people say, you're a gamer, and you're how old? Man, I bet you you're in some kind of unfurnished basement playing World of Warcraft 24 hours a day. Have you ever seen the sun? Ha ha ha. Stuff like that. That's some pretty negative stereotypes. But personally, I don't hear a lot of bad stuff when it comes to charity and gamers. So I think it might help, but I don't think we had a bad rep, at least in that category. Let's see. What else does he have here? I think that's about all I got anyways. You guys go ahead and answer the other questions. Go ahead, John, or whoever wants to go.
Yeah, I'll chime in on the stereotype thing. If the stereotype we're talking about here is that gamers are supposedly introverted, stuck in their mom's basement, non-socially interactive goofballs, well, you know, I don't think that is entirely untrue. Not to say that those people aren't out there, but I'm a gamer. I'm out in the world, and I'm a productive member, and I believe in giving to charities and creating awareness. Because the kids are the people who are going to benefit from this stuff, and whatever you can do to help sick kids is only a plus in my book. So whether or not these companies should be making a big deal, make a big hubbub about, you know, having these charities, it's a bit of ego stroking if they're, you know, maybe if they're donating a lot of money, but in the end, again, it comes down to the kids, if there's an awareness and gets more people donating money to charities to help other people, then I'm all for it.
Hey there, Audio Master G. As for me, you know, it's interesting because I've been a part of a lot of hobbies and sports where they weren't mainstream, from some of the action or extreme sports, even though I hate that term, in the 90s, like skateboarding, BMX, mountain biking, motocross. Hell, even rodeo, that things like that. From my experiences with those, I've noticed that when you strive to push to the mainstream tends to push back, or your intentions aren't necessarily as noble. It's more ego-driven. Some things are never destined for the mainstream. Some things are never destined to be recognized other than as, it's a hobby, or, it's not that important, or so on and so forth. So I really get concerned when I see people within the game industry trying to push for mainstream legitimacy. Everything matures over time. Again, as I said, you know, pushing for legitimacy is I think more egocentric. It doesn't necessarily help an industry or a sport or a hobby as a whole. And this charity thing is kind of the similar thing. If these charities were being done to make gaming look more legitimate, to make people stop thinking that all gamers live in their mom's basement, that all video games should only be played by people 18 and under, it's not going to happen. And it's kind of a sham reason to do charity in the first place. But I can tell you for a fact, with Child's Play and with some of the others that weren't mentioned in your question, like Desert Bus, some of these gaming for life, for cancer research, where guys do gaming marathons, you know, and they stream them on Justin TV and stuff like that. It's done because these people want to give back. The ESA, Mike and Jerry from Penny Arcade, they want to give back. They have gotten a lot out of the gaming industry or the parts of the gaming industry they're into. And so they legitimately want to give back, which is how charity should be. And it's a good thing. As a byproduct, it may make some people look a little differently at gamers and the gaming industry as a whole. But it's part of the maturation process, and it's part for the industry, and it's just part of doing something good. And I don't necessarily think that has to do with any specific industry you're in. I just think it's one of those cases where, you know, you don't, you know, they're doing it because they want to do a good thing. And it's, you know, we're always going to have this problem, and I think it's like John said, you know, part of the problem is that some of the stereotypes they use on this prove out to be disturbingly accurate in way too many instances. And if you look at the behavior of some of our fellow gamers, you know, we have a long way to go before games are going to be art and we're completely legitimized in the eyes of the mainstream. But it's an excellent question, and I recommend everybody, whether you do the shoebox thing Patrick does, or whether you give the Child's Play or the ESA or Desert Bus or whatever, that you get, if you're able to, give it to charity. I do, in several different ways, and I'm, well, pretty broke, mostly because video games are fucking expensive. So, thank you, Audio Master G, and we look forward to hearing from you next week. So I got a kind of a question for these guys, since we got a little bit of time to kill here. If you haven't heard, it's on the cover of the new Game Informer. Actually, I should call this the Game Informer question. Obsidian, makers of Fallout New Vegas and multiple other RPGs, as a matter of fact, don't quote me on this, but I think a lot of the guys that work for Obsidian are actually from the old studio Black Isle, which has also made a shit ton of RPGs, are combining South Park, the very hilarious adult-oriented cartoon, with an RPG. Now, for me, I normally like my RPGs to be fairly serious. Humor is okay, but I tend to like to have them slightly more serious, more, you know, your pretty prototypical world's about to go to hell, you're the only one that can save it kind of deal. So when I first started hearing whispers about this South Park RPG with Obsidian at the helm, I mean, we can pretty much guess it's going to have bugs if they use the Bethesda engine, but it struck me as a concept of maybe more of a humorous RPG, maybe more an RPG for everybody, and the only RPG like it I could think of that came close to kind of being more of a, I suppose, for lack of a better term, mainstream RPG, more of an accessible RPG, would be the Super Mario RPG. I'm sure if Gunsage was here, he'd have thousands that were, but that's not my point. My point is this has got my curiosity, even though the subject matter they're using is a little bit strange to me for an RPG. Pat, let's go with you first, since you're not an RPG fan. There's something like South Park or something a little more cartoony, make you more interested in potentially playing an RPG, or is it still, it's just an RPG?
It'd make me less interested in playing an RPG. I mean, it's not because of its seriousness or whatever. I mean, I'd rather play a really good RPG that was something I was interested in. Like, the Star Wars one is the only one that's really interested me. That Halo one that was actually in development for a little while, but who knows, maybe one day will pop up once again. That would interest me. I don't want a cartoony. I mean, maybe it was a better cartoon. I'm actually, forgive me, Canadian creators of South Park. I'm not even really that. I don't really like South Park that much. It's not bad. It's not much. It's not the seriousness. It's not the. It's just. I don't think I'd want to play a comic one. Really, you know. I think the Star Wars one is something that would. Yeah, you know, if I had time in February, I'd be playing.
That's interesting. I never even thought about that. You'd rather actually play a serious one that was more tailored to,
yeah,
tailored to, you know,
interested in, yeah, as opposed to a silly one, yeah.
as long as it's, you know, tailored to some of your complaints about RPGs. That's really interesting. I didn't think of it that way. I thought it'd be easier to get into because it's silly and comical. And are Trey Stone and Matt Parker Canadians? I didn't know that.
Yep, South Park creators are Canadians.
Yep. I had no idea. Considering how the movie went. Considering
Game Canada and all that
stuff. Oh, yeah. Wow, I feel like such a hipster now. I'll go put on my hoodie immediately.
Yep.
I just thought they didn't like Canada.
Yeah, that would be the
John. Yeah, well, it's ironic to me now, but that's just me being lazy. I never bothered to look up where the hell they're from. They could have been from Zimbabwe, for all I know. I liked the show in the early years, and I just kind of lost track of it and never caught back up pretty much where I sit. Now, how about for you, John? Are you kind of like Patrick in that because it's silly, it interests you less? Or does the silliness, the more cartooniness, make you more interested?
I like humor in my games. I don't have any problem with that. The only problem that I might have with a fully fleshed out RPG with the South Park cast is the potential of it overstaying its welcome. The South Park I'm like you. I watched South Park a lot more in the early days, but even then, you know, the half an hour chunks. The movie worked out pretty good, even though it was. You know, that was only an hour and a half. But if we're talking like 20, 30, 40-hour RPGs here with South Park stuff, I just don't know whether it would get old or not. I would hope not. But, you know, comedic RPGs like the Penny Arcade RPG, was it the Rainslick Precipice of Darkness? I haven't played them myself. I played the demo of the first one, and it was pretty good. I didn't have any trouble with that. I just wonder with the South Park, which tends to be a little more in your face and a little less subtle, I think, at times, would I get bored with it more so than do I have a problem with it being funny?
I'm kind of torn. I'm kind of like Patrick. Half of me's like Patrick in that I like South Park well enough. And especially some of the really early episodes, you know, the first, say, 4 or 5 years of it. I'm going to shoot Facebook in the face. The first 4 or 5 years of it, you know, I enjoyed the show a lot, but I just don't know. That's why I brought it up to you guys. I couldn't vocalize it correctly, but what Patrick's saying is really pretty accurate. I think it'd be too silly for me.
No.
So, we'll just have to wait and see. Oh, go ahead.
There's also that Family Guy MMO that's been popping in and out of the place that I had an invitation to test drive. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, I'd rather do, like, the Star Wars MMO beta than a Family Guy or South Park or something.
Unless I could play as Stewie and completely take over the world and kill the entire family. Then maybe. The only thing that was appealing to me about Family Guy, and there's probably going to be some nerd rage from somebody over this, was the baby. Everything else was just pretty much shit.
The dog's kind of funny, but yeah, it's the interaction with the dog.
It's Brian's funny, too. So, but, I don't know. I like South Park, and I've played a couple of their older video games, and they were fun, but I think an RPG might be a slight bit too ambitious. I don't think you're going to get RPG snobs to play it, and I'm undecided whether or not you would actually get new players to play it. So, but kind of interesting either way. I'll continue to follow it. I just saw the cover and thought that'd make a pretty good question.
Yeah, I don't even know. No, is South Park still that strong of a brand anymore? Like, is it? I know it's still on the air, but is it getting? Is there enough of a following to have a game like that?
I think with the younger generations, I hate to say this, but I think part of the thing is I outgrew it, and it felt like they were doing too many of the same jokes over again.
Mm-hmm.
I know a few of the WonderPod crew, I think, watch it fairly religiously, and I know a few other guys on my Xbox Live and Twitter account watch it all the time. So I think it's still got a following, but I think it's reached its peak and kind of gone down on the other side, so.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. It sounds like maybe we'll hear a little more after the video game, the VGA Awards. apparently they're propping that piece of shit up enough that there's like a half a dozen companies making first-time reveals on there, including Epic, which, I mean, that award show was built for Cliffy and Mike Capps at Ego right from the get-go. It's mm-hmm. a complete glitzy piece of shit, and usually the only way I find out what happens is because somehow Patrick forces himself to suffer through watching it.
I'm usually playing a handheld and looking up whenever there's a trailer. That's about it.
Is that how, yeah. No, I still couldn't watch it. I just
last
refused.
Year. Last year I was sitting on my bed with it on and playing whatever it was, some DS game, and every time it said world premiere, I looked up and then looked away. That was about how I do the VGAs.
Thankfully, I don't have Spike. So
I've got it. I just refuse to watch it.
No Mancers? How are you going to know how to survive a bear attack using karate moves? Or could a woman's breast absorb a gunshot? How are you going to know these things? I tell you.
Well, I better reevaluate my cable package.
That's right.
This isn't a show you're making up. This is real.
Answers. Yes. I mean, it's all about ways you can. Oh, ways that your urine can make you rich. And oh, it's hilarious. Look it up. It's tongue in cheek, but the entire thing is about sex and big breasted women and fighting animals. And oh yeah, it's called Mancers.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
It's Maxim the show, basically.
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, it's sounding more like usually, to me they just repackaged the man show without the girls on the trampoline and the drinking piano guy and shoved it out the door.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I know a woman's breast can't stop a bullet, but I have read a story where the bra a woman was wearing stopped a nail she hit with a lawnmower. That was pretty interesting. Not really sure I want to ever attempt to take off a bra like that. The damn thing made out of Kevlar and carbon fiber. how did we get down to this road? I blame Pat. But yes, I did not know the show Mancers.
Yep,
Mans. Is that how am I saying it right?
Yeah, it's like answers for men. Mancers.
I think about the time Spike switched its logo to Spike and whatever programming changes went along with that. And I kind of lost all interest in the channel.
I have to suffer through TNA Impact either. There you go. That's a bonus.
That's are they on Spike now?
Yeah.
I don't know. They
keep
moving around. I know that ROH is on Fox now or some shit like that, or Fox Sports Net. I don't even know when the VGAs are. I just know that Cliffy's been tweeting, oh, we're going to do an exclusive. It's a new IP. It's a different era for us. Oh, horseshit.
It's a first-person shooter.
Well, that's the thing. You know, they're like, oh, it was going to be one of our news stories. We're going in a different direction. It's kind of a scary thing. You know, this was Mike Capps, president of Epic. I'm going, you fucker said that when you revealed Bulletstorm. And while it did have different elements to it, the kill with skill thing was definitely something we had not seen before. I'm sorry, but Grayson Hunt still looked a lot like he could have just been dropped into Gears of War 3 and been perfectly fucking fine.
Yeah, those suits were very, very
good.
Yep.
I think it's going to be Epic Kart Racer.
Jazz Jackrabbit with a chainsaw.
Actually, Cliffy was talking about Jazz Jackrabbit on Twitter the other day. He was kind of saying he wouldn't mind redoing it, but he'd rather redo it from scratch.
Oh.
Which I think would probably be a good thing. Because Jazz Jackrabbit's got a lot of age on it now. Oh, no, I know what it was. I told you that on Xbox Live, Pat. Remember, he said that if he did redo Jazz Jackrabbit, he'd want him to be able to find, and I'm not going to be able to remember the whole quote, but he wanted to be able to find antlers so he could become Jazz Jackalope.
And then he had
some other thing like what he was going to do with the end with the jackalope horns, and it wasn't. I don't remember what it was, but that'd make me play Jazz Jackrabbit. Even if the game was complete crap, you could turn him into an honest to god jackalope. That'd be kind of cool. So, before we end the show and Patrick does his spiel, I need to do a quick shout out to a guy on my Xbox Live friends list. His name is The Only Remedy. He's a member of the Ditoid crew, also known as Destructoid. He's a community member over there. Played a lot of Left 4 Dead with him, Left 4 Dead 2. He's made a few games, I think, for Xbox Live Indie Channel. He sent me a message out of the blue the other day to warn me that I might possibly be spamming from my Xbox Live account. You know, in other words, he was thinking maybe my account had been hacked. No, in reality, I wasn't spamming. I just was stupid when I signed up for a gamer card website, and it spammed my whole friends list. But I want to give a shout-out to the Only Remedy. He's a cool guy. A group of people I do not play with, including him, often enough. Appreciate you sending me that message on Xbox Live if you're listening. And you know, gamers taking care of other gamers. That's always a good thing. You know which site I'm talking about, Pat.
Yeah,
the one you were sending us.
The one that banned my account from G. Yes.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't get mine as well. To be quite honest, their spamming thing, there's a box you can uncheck. It's just sneaky where they put it. The site's called Playfire, and it's actually kind of cool. If you use forums and you enjoyed, you know, the kind of gamer card thing. That site went out of business or went under because the guy couldn't afford it anymore. They actually have a gamer card thing for it. It tracks all your games, all that fun shit. Search Playfire on the internet. And whatever you do, when you're signing up, unclick the box that sends messages to all your friends on Xbox Live. Jerks. And I felt stupid because I saw it just as I was hitting register. Really felt dumb.
Oh, well.
But it was nice of him to send me one. I could have been sending Axel spam. Anyways, Pat, if anybody wants to comment on the CEO dork deathmatch, any of that stuff, Patrick's now here to tell you where you can do that.
If anybody wants to send me some real spam, I tell you, that's what I like for Christmas dinner. But anyways, here's all our stuff for you to contact us on quickly and efficiently, I think. We are on Facebook, WonderPod Online, 3 words, give us a friend request, say hi. Ask questions, do whatever the heck you want to do, comment, whatever. Facebook, WonderPod Online, check us out. We are also, of course, on iTunes. If you haven't subscribed on iTunes or rated us, please do. Apparently that's the only way we get noticed around the whorehouse that is iTunes is by rating us. So check out WonderPod on iTunes. We're also on Apple TV if you got one of those cool gizmos. You can listen to us there from your TV or whatever. We have a website, WonderPod Online. I know it's crazy. WonderPodOnline.com. Check it out. All sorts of good stuff there. We also have Twitter and emails. Bruce, tell them all about that.
The email address is WonderPodOnline@gmail.com. WonderPodOnline@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter @WonderPodOnline. All one word. I know, we're so fucking original. Or you can follow me on Twitter @ORIGIM. Or you can follow John on Twitter
at John Kehoe, JONKEHOE.
Until episode 91, which will be the year-end craptacular, I am Bruce McGee. I am out of here. See you later, people.
Cheers, guys.
Episode 91 coming up, and find out then why I'd rather put my balls in a meat grinder and agree with something. See you then.
Ooh, all sneaky-like. I like that. That's better than last week's.